Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. All right, our number, first of all, is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Love to hear from you. Our email, dave@petsofinancial.net. What changed? What changed? I mean, the market screamed higher this week. Well, most days, you know, like the best three since 1931 or something like that. Last week, or I should say the week before, we have the fastest bear market in history or what have you. Extreme volatility, extremely fearful. But what changed? What changed this week to allow people for a few days anyway to have the best rally since 1930s? Hope. Hope. That's all it was. I know, stimulus package, and we've got this, and we've got that. That's the headlines. It's always the headlines. There's always some headline. This is the reason why. And it's frankly not always the reason why, not the fundamental reason. And sometimes it's not even touching on the truth. Now, I'm sure the stimulus package had something to do with it. It helped to, you know, continue on that we're going to get it, we're going to get it. But the reality was the press conference on Monday night, when they talked about reopening the country, has changed the dialogue. Have you noticed that? It's changed it. I get it. The mainstream media hate Trump, are going to scream and yell. It makes no difference. If Trump cured cancer, we've all heard this before, they would figure out why it was a terrible thing. So they're, we're going to open by Easter. This president doesn't like science. You know, he's just an idiot. Oh, he doesn't like science, you know. Great. Okay, so we're always going to have this tension. I mean, let's just ignore them, because no matter what, they're going to twist it to a terrible thing. Number one, what could possibly be wrong with hope? Is it better for the president to act like California's governor, where he says, oh, we're going to have 24.5 million people are going to get the coronavirus here? Okay, so it's better to have a leader that lights his hair on fire and runs around the room than to give hope. Of course there's a balance between false hope and reality, or a de Blasio who did nothing and now he's like, oh, this is going to go on for months and months and months. Wow. There's something wrong with New Yorkers, by the way, that they'd elect this guy twice. Something seriously wrong. Really, this is, I mean, it's, wow. Wow. Wow, is this guy wrong. But anyway, I digress. Hope is what changed. And it doesn't mean that we're all going to go to work in every place, no matter how many people are sick, on Easter Day. Or anybody's going to go to work on Easter Day. I believe the comment was something like, wouldn't it be nice? We'll evaluate all of the data, but we need to be planning to move forward. We don't want the cure to be worse than the illness. Yeah, that's irrational. That's somebody that clearly doesn't believe in science. Hope changed. That we were going to get back. We're diligent as heck, right? Everybody's washing their hands and sanitizing and keeping their distance, and almost everybody is. Almost everywhere. doing our best as the people in private industry are cranking it up and trying to find therapeutics and ultimately a vaccine. What is clear is we're not all going to die. We're not. As a matter of fact, what is becoming clearer every day, excuse me, as we test, is that in fact, this is not a 4% or 5% killer. May in fact be far less than 1%, closer to the flu. We'll see. Testing's difficult. We don't test people without symptoms. Should we be just testing everybody? Maybe we will. But that part's becoming clear. But anybody that knows what's going to happen 2 weeks from now is lying. Hyping it. Making political points. Being scared or too optimistic. We don't know. That's the fact. But what changed this week is that there is a change coming. Our life is coming back, and we're starting to have that dialogue. I spoke this week to numerous money managers, several of which were located in New York. Now, when we talked to them 2 weeks ago, they were talking about liquidity problems, how they were going to be, you know, the markets were going to digest liquidity. They really like what the Treasury was doing, yada, yada. But it was definitely fear. This week, they were talking not about liquidity, but opportunities. Different tone. And they're at the epicenter. That's why I mentioned they were in New York. Not because people in New York are smart. They elected de Blasio. They're not. Actually, I don't think people in New York have any clarity of most things. But when it comes to money management, I don't really care where people are from if they're good thinkers. I know some of the organizations we don't talk to because they're not. Their economists are full of something like anti-Trumpers. I don't need that. I don't need a pro-Trumper. I don't want that. I don't want a political bias that taints their economic viewpoint. Wow, have they ever been wrong? You know what I mean? Hope changed this week, and I can feel it from people. We're in the midst of the toughest weeks. You don't need to call and tell me I don't know what's going on. That it's all going to blow up, that the numbers are exploding. I know they are. They're going to be high today, be high tomorrow. I assume they'll be really high next week. They were high yesterday. But we already know that. If I know something, why am I going to panic about it when it happens? There's hope. There's hope to the other side. We're not going to need 40,000 ventilators in New York City. We're not. We're already figuring out how to get two patients on one or four on one. We're going to be able to modify very simply, according to the anesthesiologists, anesthetists, association, they can modify what they use. And if you are older, you've got compromised issues, be extra careful. But I think it's great to think that someday I get to see my grandkids again. Don't you? Aren't these weeks and days long right now? Little social contact? It's tough. And I really feel for, like, my mother-in-law. My goodness gracious. She can't see her friends. She's in her 90s, still at home. But there's nobody living with her. It's lonely. It's lonely. It's tough. I don't think there's anything wrong with feeling that, embracing that hope, seeing light at the end of the tunnel, knowing soon, very soon, we're going to start having aspects of our life back. And then we're going to have it all back. And it doesn't mean the virus is gone. It means we deal with it. And maybe it is gone. The heck do I know? The heck does anybody know? Seriously. The doctors are changing their mind all the time. I think one of the worst things, if you will, in my experience, is when somebody says, yeah, well, my husband is a doctor at the XYZ. Okay. Maybe he's too close to the situation to actually have any clarity. Maybe the clinic or the hospital he works in has an abundance or a lack of a weird happenstance. Some hospitals in New York, for example, are just maxed out. Others are not. It's a changing situation. We really don't know what's happening. What we do know, it's not going to kill us all. And they're doing everything they can to make sure our life returns to normal. Soon. Soon is practical. All right, I got to take a quick break. Jim, Tess, we're going to be up to bat next, and our number is 580-5436-580-KIDO. Oh, okay. All right. Well, I've been told we have no more breaks. Let's go to the phones then. All right. Well, I got to pay more attention, I guess. No, we're supposed to have them. I know. They must have been jumped up, bundled up or something. Huh? All right. Jim, welcome.
Hey, Dave, what's happening?
Hey, we're having a better week this week for sure.
Well, I got to admit, I find it a little bit more entertaining when you're kind of on defense, you know. Current situation is giving lots of ammunition for the annuity pimps and all that kind of a thing.
Well, you're right about that. You know, I've been trying to kind of ignore those clowns, but you're right. You can't ignore them because now they're just really loud and obnoxious.
Well, you know, this is a really good indication, I guess, about life in general. You know, there couldn't have been two, you know, it's like the tale of two cities. It was the best of times and the worst of times. And, like, last year was, like, a fantastic year, and then in no time, and it gives everybody an idea of the fragility of things, you know? I mean, whether it's the flu or who knows, there may be an asteroid out there with our name on it. So you really don't know. So this should be a kind of like a wake-up call to people to whatever, not get too comfortable, to go with the flow, et cetera.
Well, to understand that you're not really in charge.
Right.
We're not. And we're all going to die. We just don't know when, and we don't know of what.
Well, you know, who knows how many mad scientists there are out there right now coming up with different kinds of viruses.
Totally. Totally. And, of course, when this first broke, everybody was saying, that's out of the military thing or whatever it is, you know. So it was you're absolutely right, or artificial intelligence, Terminator, all those things that are very real, possible things that we have very evil people in the world. And I certainly now they have amazing science at their fingertips, amazing and also deadly science at their fingertips. So I agree. Those are the types of things that I'm glad we have secret, if you will. The spooks are out there and watching for people like that, listening for the terrorists. They would love an opportunity like that.
Well, so, you know, me personally, I just turned 74, and I'm in contact with a girlfriend I had back like 46 years ago, and that's kind of exciting.
Well, good for you. I like it. A buddy of mine got reacquainted. We were just talking about it. My wife and I were just talking about it yesterday, how they met, and it was very sweet. They just happened to meet on Facebook after both of them were widowed a few years, and they were high school classmates, and then bam, rest is history.
Yeah,
who knows, Jim?
Well,
good luck with that, huh?
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, I had this classmate, and she was on Facebook, but I told her I don't do Facebook. I like to email, so we were emailing her, you know, back and forth, and I mentioned to her about my girlfriend. Well, she was a bit snoopy, so she actually got her address. So we started a correspondence and everything. Anyway, this friend of mine, Janice, that got us connected, She died just last month of all sorts of respiratory problems, you know. And I'm thinking that's kind of ironic that she died of respiratory problems and now the rest of the world has respiratory problems.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So anyway. But well, anyway, I mean, I'm still whatever. I mean, as far as I know, I'm virus-free. I like to ride the bicycle, get out in the fresh air, you know, and all that kind of thing.
I like to try to run a little bit every day because I think by definition, if I'm running, I probably don't have it.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to run faster than the virus, you know. Well,
all
anyway,
right.
Take
Jim,
care, Dave, and maybe, you know, whatever. A lot like with the weather. You know, they'll give the weather report, and they'll say it's going to rain. Well, I say, well, the weather will do what it's going to do, and I'm going to do what I'm going to do. The same thing with the virus, you know.
Yeah.
The virus can do what it wants to do, and I'll do what I want to do. So.
Well, someday we'll be able to do that. I think it's good that everybody's being responsible, doing their best, and but life will return, I think, sooner than later.
Well, I'm more of an asocial person anyway. I mean, I've never been around large groups.
I
mean, I like people, but...
But apparently the chicks dig you. I mean, you mentioned two of them here, so, okay. I guess.
You know, in high school and college, I never so much as dated a girl, you know. I was afraid of them.
Well, so. they're coming around now, Jim. All right.
Well, take care. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Tess, how are you?
Hi, pretty well. Hey, so I'm interested in what your thought is regarding real estate. You know, my age has taught me that real estate is pretty big in what's happening with the economy. And it concerns me that everything was going full bore and now it's just kind of hit the skids real quickly. And I say that because I'm talking with people who are landlords, some I've known, some I just recently met. And I know that although with a lot of the building, these landlords have Section 8. And I'm not very familiar with them. All I know is that they're government paid rentals. I don't know how much they pay on them. But of the ones that I met, three of them said they have for 2 months not received any money, any government payments for their renters. So they're getting behind on their payments. Excuse me. And then I hear the mayor and now I hear the governor and they're asking landlords to, you know, be willing to bypass rentals. And I'm thinking, is the government going to pick those up if they're already in some of their programs not paying them and haven't for a couple of months? So I have a friend who purchased a house and now their loan has been stalled. It was supposed to go through last week. And they're not, the lender's not giving them any information. So I'd really like your insight for people who are thinking about buying right now or maybe doing any more real estate investments. And boy, especially if you're older and you're thinking about doing that.
Well, as far as older folks go, I don't know why you'd want to take care of a rental. I find people that come in are just sick and tired of it. We also find that people can't do math very well. They make math look like they want it to. For example, on a house, if you have your renter there and you're getting, I don't know, $1,500 a month, making up whatever number you want, and that's great, that's cash flow, and that's like a 6% cash flow, except when you need a new furnace, except when you need carpet, except when somebody isn't in the house. In other words, it's not always full. And things happen, and we don't even do the math to depreciate real, you know, real depreciation. And so it is something that I find a very poor investment, if you will, for older people, because unless you're out there fixing the toilets and all those things, and people don't like to do that when they're 75, and they shouldn't be climbing on the roof, by the way. So it's one of those things that there's, for older people, I don't think makes sense. So I'll answer your last question first. How's that? And then let's roll into the rest, which I'm not sure there's a question there. I is more like, what's going on with Title 9 or 8 or whatever it was that I know what you're talking about, where it's government subsidized rentals. That is a specialized area. That is totally specialized. You and I don't go invest in that, or maybe you do, but people don't invest in that. That's a specialized area where people that know how to do it right and do it right deal with that. I cannot imagine in this day and age where we're throwing money out of helicopters that there's any problem getting payments, but I'll take your word for it, take the word of the folks that were there. But as far as going into real estate now, I think it's a great opportunity for the right person if you are. Not that it's a slowdown. Maybe a month from now it gets slower. I know things are slow, but everything is slow. I don't think prices have come down yet, unless you're talking about a very, very desperate buyer that says, okay, fine, I just got to get this done, and I don't know when this is going to get better. But generally speaking, I doubt housing prices have collapsed in the Boise area. Can you maybe get a little bit of a better deal? Probably. But a couple thousand bucks is not a big deal. We're not talking about a big collapse. So if you can, maybe you're going to avoid bidding wars like we had. The time might be now to move. I know my daughter's looking, and so kind of talking to realtors and thinking about it. So far, on our end, nothing has really broken, and I think it's too new. So, again, it's just we'll see how long this virus puts people down, puts business down, but everything has come to a grinding halt. Tess, we've got a little bit of time if you have any other comments.
Oh, sure. Well, I'm glad to hear you say that because I really, for older people, don't think that's a really good idea either. You know, that's for some entrepreneur folks to jump out there into real estate. Mm-hmm. And you see with all the building. But when we, a long time ago, I lived in Alaska, and it was in the 80s. And, you know, we saw people literally one out of two homes when the economy was starting to go upside down there. Walk away from their houses, and this is no kidding, literally packed it up, told the bank they were leaving, and they left. Mm-hmm. And so what we saw in the neighborhood were outside investors come in from actually from China and a couple other countries and pick those homes up. And it didn't take long. It took about maybe eight months to a year before they filled all those homes up with renters, and then the crime rate just skyrocketed. Mm. So with all the buildings that you see here in the area, it just makes me curious as to, with the economy going stop, what happens with the builders, with all these homes? Now, I'm pretty safe because I just have my Social Security, no investments, nothing else, and I live pretty low to the ground, you know, I'm pretty basic. Mm-hmm. So can you answer me, what is happening with all the building? Now, they're still building, are they not?
Yeah, they are. And I'm sorry, we're going to run out of time this hour, but thank you so much. And I will talk a little bit about that, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, and they are. There's building going on out there. We see it. I still see it right across the street right now. So, yes, they are building, and I'm glad because it's outdoors. They can still stay safely apart. All right, we got to take a break here for Fox News. We'll be back in the second hour for hour number two of Money Matters. I'm going to talk not just about hope. I want to talk about, we'll touch on these annuity pimps, I suppose. Jim made me do it. It's not my fault. We'll touch on that and the fear that's out there. Man, I'll tell you what. I can't even get a cup of coffee around here. This is crazy. So we're supposed to have commercial breaks. No wonder. Now I know why the break at the half hour, right, went on and on and on and on in Fox News. Now we know, right? Not all commercials here are 7 minutes long. And anyway, and now we don't have Fox News, so I'm heading off to coffee. Get back here. All right, so here we go. All right, so anyway, we'll get a cup of coffee because I'll bet there's a commercial break at some point during this hour. And as I always like to tell you and remind you, these are my opinions and my opinions only. Not this station, broker-dealers, or anything like that. And if we mention a stock favorably or negatively, it should have nothing to do with your portfolio, and we're not here to tell you to buy, or sell. That, as you well know by now, is beyond idiotic. It's not entertaining. It's noisy. And again, I don't mean to put down specific people out there, but that's absurd. It's absurd that you would toss something out to be a buy and never follow it again. Not everything is a buy necessarily forever. All right, our number here is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. If you have any questions and prefer email, that's just fine. We're real good with that. And I wanted to say, I was going to talk a little bit about, well, let me do this first, okay? Because I always like to jump on questions, and then we'll come back to, if you will, my monologue, okay? First of all, good morning, because I missed this one in the last hour. We've talked about this before. Once again, either this Saturday or the next, will you share your thoughts on the national debt? It's approaching $25 trillion now with the current bill. I can't imagine this not having disastrous results at some point. At what point will we be unable to dig ourselves out from under it, even if we try? When will it become more than our country can overcome? Don, it's a very fair question, and I wish we were talking about it. We don't talk about it, do we? I mean, it's just like we need $2 trillion. There it is. We're going to need more. So that, you know, and politicians get into a bidding war. Now, I see your $2 trillion. I'm going to raise it to 2.5. You know why? Because I love people more than you do. I want to make sure that we pay off student debt or whatever other thing that shows how much more I care than you. So I get it. It's something that is really frustrating, right? And many people, unfortunately, in a rush to do this. And I don't know that there's any other way to do it. Don't get me wrong. We're actually going to pay people more money to stay home. That has kind of some moral hazard to it, doesn't it? I don't know. I think this is going to be quick and over and done and try to get the economy up and going. But $2 trillion is gone. And now it's going to be on the backs of our children, grandchildren, et cetera. Look, if interest rates don't rise, it's something we can certainly afford to do. When interest rates rise, it becomes much more expensive to do. And D.C. will not deal with the fact that something like 70%, it's real close to that number, is already in entitlement programs. Entitlement programs. And we won't talk about it. We're not allowed to talk about it. Remember, if you talk about reforming Social Security, then you hate old people and you just want grandma to die. If you're a Republican, that's what you want anyway, because the media tells everybody that Republicans are these strange people over there. They're the conservative people that actually hate old people and children. They want children to be dumb, maybe even go hungry, and they want grandma to die if we're trying to reform Medicare, Medicaid, or Social Security. Does reform mean you stop a program? No, of course it doesn't. So that's where the real money is, and we don't deal with it. And the only way we deal with it is to say we're going to raise taxes. Well, that slows down economic growth. Every time, every place, with every person that's done it, Republicans and Democrats, the economy slows down. When the economy slows down, tax revenues go down. And every time we've lowered taxes, tax revenues go up. Why? Because the economy does better. We have to find the right balance. And we've watched government, particularly under Obama, it's stopped growing now. Not the debt. I'm talking about government. Government, the size of government. Exploded. From less than 20% of our GDP each year to well over 20%. And that's a big deal because remember, when government takes a dollar, it destroys part of that dollar, if not all of it. When private sector has that dollar, it multiplies. We just forget how destructive government is. We just talk about it like it's slow. Well, if it's slow, for example, how productive is it that I go stand in line at the DMV? Is that productive? Is that economically, wow, that's awesome. But we accept it. Now, I understand we have to drive places. We've got to get the right licenses. We have to have the right, policing of that so somebody doesn't steal identity. All those things are so super important. But it has nothing to do with the process up front. Number 23. We've all seen it. The sloth, right? We've all seen that. It's very frustrating that they don't go out and make government work better, more efficiently. To me, it's frustrating that we just accept it, or we just accept more rules. So, Don, I appreciate what you're saying, and there isn't a number. That's the thing. There isn't this specific number that says once we get to this dollar or this percentage, because Japan crossed that percentage line years ago. They're supposed to be in a death spiral for, 15, 20 years now. They're not. Doesn't work, because they're certainly not booming. But the reality is they just haven't died or blown up. It slows us down in the long run. And more government and people are making the case, it doesn't matter how much the deficits are. That's wrong. Because what that really says is I want more government. And more government is destructive. You take 1% more of GDP, 2% more of GDP, it takes it out of productive into destructive. And that's a death spiral we don't want. I believe it's right that we throw everything we have at this. I do. And through that process, I even accept that some of the stupid things that they did, some of the really, if you will, evil things they did, just to, in order to get something, you're going to hold it up to throw money at the Kennedy Center. Or what else was it? I mean, it's just some nonsensical things. It has nothing to do with Planned Parenthood, but let's throw money at them. It's a terrible thing. And I'm sorry it happened, and some of the things got thrown out, thank God. But some of the things are still there, but we got to get this thing moving. I hope they pay a political price is all I can say. But anyway, I am not worried at this time, and there is not a magic number that I am aware of. There's lots of opinions on it, but I am concerned like you that government just keeps growing bigger and bigger. And that's not just your freedoms. That's big. It's taking your freedoms away. But it's also literally destroying the foundation of our economy. It does. Government doesn't do things well at all. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. And if you do prefer email like Don, it's dave@petsofinancial.net. I want to touch on this real quick because, Bob, I want you to hang on here. I want to finish some thoughts I had from this past week, okay? We had the best day since 1933. But we didn't go down the next day. And back to, I understand that we've already talked about hope, but this is just huge. And I'm just saying that when I talk to these money managers, it's a different tone 1 week to the next. It wasn't anything they were intentionally doing. It just, I could hear it. But I also know that in my heart had changed. The weight of this time on all of us is, it's different for different people. But it's easy enough to appreciate that the weight of worrying about other people's money, helping them stay on track, understanding that these things are temporary, but nobody knows, right? We just don't know how long temporary is. I don't think it's hard to imagine that sometimes these days are pretty tiring. But something happened early in the week, and I just knew this, and I wanted to share this with you. I absolutely knew that yet again, as I've said before, I'm not being a wild-eyed optimist to say that almost every time, literally almost every time, we're going to have a hurricane, natural disaster, a pandemic, whatever it is, all of us, because we're human beings, every single one of us, myself included, goes dark. And the media goes absolutely bonkers. And probably by necessity, the governor of Florida, let's just say, is going to talk about it being the worst hurricane, right? Because he's got to get people off the coast. It's not time to sit down on the beach and have a beer and watch the storm. We got to worry about everybody, or the streets get crowded. All those things that are issues. We got to go save you instead of save somebody else because you won't take care of yourself. I get that part. But the idea that this earthquake in Tibet is going to kill tens of thousands of people. And you go, it wasn't 10,000. I mean, it's every life lost is bad, but it's always exaggerated. This is going to be the worst storm ever. Tens of thousands, millions of Americans are going to die. Everybody ran that 20% chart, right, out forever. You know, 20% of the people get it, and then 1% or 4% of the people die. 4% of the people die. So we have 20 million deaths or whatever the number is. It's a huge number. Yeah, that would be catastrophic. This is not going to happen. He said, well, what do you know? Here's what I know. That won't happen. Everybody goes to the worst case every time with everything. It's human nature. And when we were going to be eaten by saber-toothed tigers, you had to, every little crackle in the woods made sense to be on your alert. Because you could die. Now, we by our own design, our own desire, will not turn the deadly box off. And where does that take us all? And where does it give voice to?
Well, here's the epidemiologist, Dr. So-and-so from the Yale Institute of Deadly Diseases. Gee whiz, what an expert you are. Yeah, and then we've run a lot of models here. And I'm telling you, they're just not doing enough. We need a million ventilators. That's what we're going to need. A million, because millions are going to die, and this disease will never, ever leave us. Ever. In fact, it's going to mutate into other really deadly diseases. That's what our modeling shows. Thanks for tuning in. I want to watch that again because he'll be on in the next hour, and the next hour, and the next hour after that. And if not him, it's somebody else to tell us how we're all going to die. Thanks. And now an ED commercial. We'll be right back. Wow. This is the world we live in now, and it's just constant, and we play that game. We're willing participants. We're not even willing participants. We have to walk over, turn on the remote. Well, Dave, we're just stuck in the house now. Yeah, I know. That's what Netflix is for. Why don't you stream some, you know, historic program or watch some animals eat other animals. I like those. Watch Blue Planet. FaceTime with your grandkids since you can't see them. We just don't have to live there. But this is what I know. It won't be that bad. And they are changing the models. So you say, you don't know anything? You're right. I don't. I know human nature. And I also know that the models are all changing. China doesn't even wash their hands. They poop in the street. And they hate their people enough to have a virus for 2 months and then have a Chinese New Year's and gather everybody together and then fly home. He said, well, you can't believe the Chinese numbers. You're right. You can't. Not at all. But I do believe that when Apple says our factories are working again, they are. When I hear Starbucks say our cafes are open again. They are. It's not a giant corporate / Chinese conspiracy to let you know that actually the country is in shutdown. So they do nothing and they're back to work. Italy is not us, as you heard Representative Fulcher say. It's not the same. It's not the same. And we are running at light speed to solve these problems. Like we've never been able to before with supercomputers and cooperation we've never seen. Vastly in industries, we're bringing all of these players into the White House. That's why I know it's going to be way better. And it's not even going to be way better. It's going to be so much better. People will be going, well, I guess it wasn't millions or even hundreds of thousands of people. And I guess the virus is gone, not here forever. But they won't have to apologize because you only have to apologize if you're optimistic about something. Because remember, now you're just being more prepared. You're more clear-headed, right? If you're running around the room with your hair on fire. But that was the epiphany. You're hearing it that we're going to go back to work. That's what changed. And I know next week is going to be miserable. I know that. Don't you? We all already know that.
I mean, there's just no need for me every day to sit there and go, oh, gosh, I sure hope that there's not another 10,000 cases in New York. There will be. I already know. I don't need to know that it's New Orleans starting to go. And it's like, yeah, it is. I've been there. It's stunning to me that they haven't all got it. I mean, it's just not the most hygienically perfect place in America. But the idea that we are actually strategically thinking about how to reopen in parts that aren't as affected as we stand apart from each other and recognize, yes, the virus is amongst us. But maybe, just maybe, all this stuff, the therapeutics, the malaria thing with the Z-Pak and other things that are coming might not tell us that even if I get it, I'm not going to die if you're not totally compromised. And yes, you are going to have to stay, unfortunately, in kind of isolation for a while so you don't get it. But that won't kill all of us. And I'm not saying, for those of you who are compromised, that we don't care. But I guarantee you, you care about your grandkids keeping their jobs and growing up in the world that you thought they were going to grow up in. That's what seems to me to have changed so much last week. And that was my own personal epiphany, and you don't have to agree at all. You're welcome to call here and tell me what a buffoon I am. I just know the numbers are changing, and they're changing the right direction. Fast. We're going to have this tension between the doctors that don't want to open up anything ever again until no one tests anywhere in the world with any virus. That's their job. How do we stop it? We have no human contact. If you never want to get sick, don't ever go near a human being. Maybe even a dog. That's not how we're built. So there's going to be a tension between those that are doing their job trying to stop the virus and those that are doing their job to get the world working again and to keep us mentally healthy. And to keep the economy growing so we have actual money to take care of sick people for anything. We're going to have that tension and argument. What I don't want to do is jump into either camp and fight against the other. I want to hear them both. And the good news for me also is continuing to watch this administration allow these rock star doctors and administrators to run like the wind and to bring private industry alongside. This public-private combination is just, it's unbelievable. It's just unbelievable. We've never seen this before. The captains of industry in the White House working together. Not against each other, together. How do we all share the data on this virus with the supercomputer at IBM and figure it out together? That's what they're doing. Spending billions of dollars, not the government, working at light speed, not the DMV speed. We proved in a week that the government couldn't deliver a test kit. So what'd they do? They turned to the private industry, and we got them coming. We even have one now, supposed to do it in 5 minutes from your home? Isn't that crazy? How fast this is coming. They've unleashed the power of our country on this virus, and they'll find it. They got it. They already are. That's what changed. And I know. It's going to change back. We're going to have rough times. We're going to have more numbers coming out of somewhere or multiple places that are frightening. But it's not. All of the models, if you will, are changing. people that really know, not me, people that really know, the models are changing. But we don't have to play the game every day and sit in front of the box and wonder in depression when this is going to end and will I be taken or somebody in my family. That's your choice. I choose to get a little bit of information, turn it off, and if I need to, I can go ahead and think about it. But how well do you think when you have a fire hose of data coming at you? Me either. There is no real thinking going on. Just absorption of data, negative data. No thought. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. Wow, this all this new equipment, we're still getting used to it. So we have commercials that run, or the, you know, it's just, you don't know what's going to run or not run. And so it's kind of exciting, but keeps us on our toes. But I did get my cup of coffee, as referenced earlier, couldn't get out for, well, gosh, almost an hour. It was straight through. Anyway, good stuff. I enjoy it, and I enjoy visiting with you. So please do give us a call. I know we kind of got a little bit. We got several calls came in right there at the break. And with the equipment being, it's very, 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 very hard for Jacob to jump on the phones as well. So if you tried, didn't get picked up, try now. It's a great time to give us a call and get in line. Let's go to Bob, who's been very patient. Bob, thank you for holding. Go ahead, please.
Good morning. You've made comments in the past about value investing or value equity funds being out of favor. So A few questions related to that. How are value funds performing before 2008, 2009? Did that part of the, what happened in the economy change value investing? And if we know, and you've said that value investing has been out of favor over the past few years, can we expect that to change now? And or do fund managers still describe themselves as being a value investor or growth?
Yeah, that's a great bunch of questions, Bob. And I like the contemplation of prior to 08. It's a very interesting question. And I think before 08, with the amount of debt, companies, when they sunk to a low valuation in a more cyclical environment, if you will, economically cyclical, they just kind of borrowed their way out and they were okay. And then when they came out the other side, the profits came in and they mounted them up. So you could buy stocks at a low PE ratio knowing that that was okay. They weren't going to go out of business. Now it looks like what we call value traps, right? Some of these stocks that are selling for very low multiples end up going to zero, right? It's kind of like a high dividend. Hey, this one pays 8% right before they pay zero, right? Those are value traps, and we do have to be careful with that. So I think the world was different before that. And do managers express themselves as value versus growth? The answer is they tend not to. They try to they get boxed in because of the stocks they buy based on sales, valuations, like PE ratios. They divide them up, okay, in their style boxes, if you've seen those, where they've got small, mid, and large, and growth value blend. They do divide them up, and they divide them up whether the manager wants them to or not, and throw them in that box and assign them because of that. So you do wind up, though, with many managers that are more in a blend category that you thought might have been and talk like there's a value bend. Why? Because we've seen this shift really in the last 20 years, but materially in the last 5 to 10. And the shift with managers is, hey, I can see a stock like Google or Amazon with a very high PE ratio as a value if their earnings and growth rate sustain it. And one of the managers who was a famous value manager was Bill Miller. Now, he's been really hot, the only guy that beat the market 10 years in a row. He always called that a happenstance. And then sure enough, after that, he was, well, not so good, okay? Ran into a really bad cold streak. But famously, he owned Amazon as a value manager. And he would go around and talk about it and talk about Amazon and how it was a value by their metrics and so on. So I think you're seeing a blending of those, right? Where people don't justify. It's not a justification. It's how you see something. I see Apple as a value stock, frankly, right? And personally, I have for several years because they're growing very rapidly, and I don't think they sell for too high a multiple. I see Google as a fine value. I don't see it as a deep value stock, but I see it as a fine value because they dominate. And I'm also willing and found over the years, and I think most managers are this way, right? Where you look at a super high quality company and you say, I just don't know why I have to sell that or why it wouldn't have a higher valuation than lower quality, right? So that kind of style has changed where people aren't just like, well, I got to blow it out because it's now above average market PE multiple. Those types of things, those are, Bob, so I think investing has changed and evolved because of that. So I don't know if I missed all of your questions, but it was a very insightful question. Please comment.
No, you hit all the points. So the style boxes of growth and value, is that just the companies like Morningstar? That's how they make their money with saying that stuff, and the fund managers really don't like that? Is it just a marketing thing?
I think it is a marketing thing for Morningstar. Yeah, it's their style boxes and how they do it, and we've all fallen into that. But, you know, the reality is that money's not managed that way anymore. It's just not. The style boxes are out. There's a few people that, if you will, you have to start somewhere in this industry, okay? You do. But if you're really basic in your thinking, a proper diversification is to cover all nine of those style boxes, and that's just not really true. There's much more than those style boxes to it. So because there's correlations, all the things you have to consider. But it gives people this basic, hey, we make sure you're not overdone in one particular box, and they feel like they're doing their job. It's a way that data tries to prove the future, which doesn't work, as we well know. And it takes a couple decades to really know how little you know about the future. So, you know, these boxes, they're going away in the real world. They really are going away as a thought process. But that's, and this idea that you go into value or you don't. I look at stocks, and I'll tell you honestly, this is something that's changed a lot over the past, I would say we've really moved this direction over the past 10 to 15 years, but it's amplified itself in our thought process going forward. And that is, I do not want to take and buy cheap stocks because the world's changing so fast, cheap becomes zero. I want to own the highest quality companies, category killers, until they're not. And I don't worry so much about pricing. I worry about quality. Now, I do like to buy dips, and that's why this has been an unbelievable gift to people. And I wrote this down, and I'm going to say this real quick. And, Bob, thank you for your call. I appreciate it. I really do. Great question. As we head into this commercial break. You know, if you're not buying now on these kind of dips, to buy the high-quality companies 35% off that we're talking about, you never will. You never will. There's not a point where the dip says now. The only dip that said now is because I've done this for 40 years. I know when I just want to throw up and I push the buy button that that's a great trade. It can go lower, but that's a great trade. When you're just getting beat up, but you buy something. Those are always the best trades. But if you won't buy now, if you can't buy now, you never will. So don't pretend. Just stop. Just put it all in mutual funds, dollar cost average, do whatever. If you walk around thinking, I'm going to put this to work when, fill in the blank. I know people that have done that for literally since the year 2000 when they got crushed because all they owned was tech stocks. They didn't buy in 08. They're not buying now because they always want to catch the exact bottom or they feel stupid. Get over it. You're stupid. And what I mean by that is I know I don't get the low trade. I don't get the low day. But if you give me the greatest corporations in the world a third off of a good value, that's an amazing buy. And if it goes to 40% off or 45, call me stupid. As that comes back inevitably to beyond where it was. You just got to get over yourself that this is not the low. You don't know. I don't know. But if you've been holding on and haven't bought, just forget about it. You never will. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. We'll be right back. Hello and welcome. Thank you so much for joining us. Our number is 580-KIDO, 580-5436 is our number. I've got so much stuff from the past week. My gosh, it's just crazy. It's absolutely crazy. I don't even know. Let me just touch on this one thing, okay? Because I said I would say something about this on the annuities, just as a reminder, okay? Because I realize that, for example, those that might have an equity index annuity or are out pimping them like the high commission salespeople do. Here's the thing that is really important. Yeah, you haven't lost any money. You didn't lose money in money markets, cash. You actually made some money in government bonds. Okay? You didn't lose any money on real estate. Yeah, you did on publicly traded, but not non-publicly traded. And guess what? You didn't give away 10% in commission. And for those of us that own stocks, we've gone up 10% our whole life, not 3. That's the reality of it. We get 10% instead of 3. Our money's not tied up for 10 years. If you realize you made a really bad mistake and got talked into something you shouldn't have that won't work, guaranteed not to work, and you change your mind like in 5 years, you may get back less than what you put in 5 years ago. And if the market does well, you don't. They cap it. The good news is the legislation, the Department of Insurance has pushed a new, by the way, it completely, it's a beautiful thing. It passed. It's not the magic thing, which is to get rid of this garbage, okay? Because there's so many other ways. You want guarantees and market participation, then do a structured note. That's a beautiful thing. And you can do them with the J.P. Morgans of the world, which are much safer than any insurance company, which is a guarantor of the annuity. Much safer. You can even get FDIC insurance on it. You can't get that in a equity index from an equity indexed annuity pimp. You can't. They're not available. If you're really that scared, there's so many choices. We don't do them because they don't make sense. But if you need that guarantee that you can't lose, you can do it in multiple ways better. Why? Because there's no 10% commission. That's why. So the pimps feel like they've got their day in the sun whenever there's a market sell-off. It's just not true. They don't lose money, but they won't make any money either. I'm not sure why that's like happy days. Because when the market comes back, or like last year when we made 25%, you made 3. It doesn't work. So I get it. All right, so that's enough of that nonsense. All right, let me read a couple of quick emails here. Fred, you hang on, and then we're going to grab you, okay? All right, so Mike says, does the U.S. really borrow money from China or any other country? Who does the U.S. pay interest to on what is called the federal debt? Great question. Most of it is held by Americans and institutions in America. Okay. Do we borrow money from China? Yeah, they're free to buy our bonds. So is Japan. And everybody made a big case 25, maybe 30 years ago now, that Japan was going to own us because they had so much debt. And what if they sold it all? Well, of course, they did sell most all of it. And nothing happened. The reason people all over the world own U.S. debt is because it's the safest and most liquid thing to trade. That's why. Don't be afraid of it. It's all right. It's all right. But we own the most of it, okay? Us and our institutions. Okay, here we go. Jim says, your political rants are a real turnoff, especially when you attack science. Are you aiming for the Limbaugh replacement job? No, I'd love that job, but no, they don't even know I exist, so I'm not going to get the Limbaugh replacement job. Jim, real quick, though, to your point, look, I would rather that politics wasn't involved in every single thing there is out there. And when I talk about it, I totally get, if you're on the other side of the political spectrum from me, you're going to hear a non-viable rant. But we have to understand in the context of the financial markets, that is a fact. And when people are scared to death, they don't want to own any equities at all. And what changed this week is that science that you're remarking about. And the idea that everything is sit in front of the TV, I'm talking about Fox News too. If you really want to bury yourself in the TV every day, I do not know how you have clarity. I don't care what network you watch. It will terrify you. That's what they're there for. That's how they get ratings. But when people are not investing, and then this week they do, I need to ask that question. Why? What happened? What really happened? The stimulus? My rear. We had so much stimulus from the Treasury on bonds, it didn't change a thing. This week we saw municipal bonds go up 10% in one day. They don't do that. Why did they do that? Jim, the reason they did that is not going to be found in the headline news. Because it's complicated. It's because we go back to 08 and there were bond desks. There are no bond desks now. Dodd-Frank made sure that there is no real trading, no inventory of bonds. So they don't hold them anymore. So when our system goes into crisis, you shoot first and ask questions later. People sell and then don't buy, and we have a dislocation in the markets. And then 10% moves occur when what? Fear is relieved. Or margin sales or whatever are over, or they're unwinding trades in Hong Kong or what have you. These are the complications of day-to-day trading. But what changed? Fear. So we had plenty of influx. But I think politics has so much to do with it, so much to do with our day-to-day, unfortunately, reporting and how people feel. Our number is 580-5436. Thank you for the email, KIDO. Let's go ahead. Fred, go ahead.
Dave, thank you. One of the curiosities I've always had is... in terms of the energy sector, it seems like there has been a real dip. Mm-hmm. And the question, and they pay pretty good dividends, but the question is it may have to do with your last answer, is it political why they're not doing better than they are? I know there's a glut right now, but we're also pumping to the strategic oil reserve.
We are. Fred, it's there's a number of things you have to look at in the energy sector. It's not political. It might be political on a geopolitical sense that we have a fight brewing between Russia and the Saudis, right? Okay?
Yep.
That doesn't help right now. But really, it's fundamental. It's fundamental in the sense that we have too much oil between the Saudis, Russia, and us. The world is awash in oil, okay? We don't need it. We don't import it. We're a net exporter now. That's a stunning development, by the way. That's a geopolitical development. It is amazing what has happened. But it also means that energy companies can't count on energy prices being higher or much higher than they are now. They'll go higher. They will. But the other fundamental is we're in a global slowdown, aren't we? And so we're just not using as much. We just aren't. But finally, the fundamental reason also, Fred, that we have to be really careful in the space, don't chase the yields, okay, is that we have a circumstance now where we really can see a day not too far in the future where we use very, very little oil. There's so much energy now that is saved, right? And so many new things that are coming up that are, quote, green. But in addition, in our country, natural gas is that bridge fuel. And we have so much of it. So, so much of it. So cheap that we just don't need as much oil. We don't use oil to make energy like we did, hardly anymore. And natural gas is what's replaced that. So when people talk about that with their, you know, I drive an electric car. Well, I'm so proud of you. You're just green as heck. What do you think drives those electric cars? Natural gas plants do. So that's what's really going on there, Fred. Fundamentally, these stocks are, many of them are in real trouble. I would be very careful there. Stay with the highest quality, and you can do that globally, whether it's Total, British Petroleum, after ruining the Gulf for a year, has definitely come back. So be careful, though, because many of these others are not going to make it. There's too much debt. It's too expensive to put holes in the ground. And some of them are empty, too. They don't all have oil. So it is it's a tough business, and they have not done well even in a higher oil price environment. It's been rough. And getting capital to them is almost impossible now. There's just no way people are going to lend to these companies that are, well, they're just indebted now and prices are low. They're just not going to lend them money to punch more holes in the ground. Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you, Fred. Have a good day. Be careful of those value traps like we talked about before. And I'm not saying you can't get a dead cat bounce here, but we got to be careful of those. All right, we got to take our final break. Is that correct? It is correct. I hear the music. I didn't know. We don't know. We never know when commercials might pop up here. Our number is 580-KIDO. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Hey, if you prefer to listen to podcasts, miss something you want to catch up to, that's at petsofinancial.com. PetsoFinancial.com under the media tab, I think. It's pretty easy to find. But you get the podcast there. You can also go to the Apple Store. They will download there as well. But we'd like to hear from you. And if you have any comments, questions, that's great. We'd love to hear from you. We're there. We're being careful, and we're not seeing clients in person, but we're there. And, you know, we want to be there to take care of folks right now. It's a tough time. It's a tough time. I think it's from what I've seen, I've just been amazing. It really is to watch people caring for the people around them, being generous. Very naturally, you know, we had a question on real estate before, and people I know very naturally are just saying, hey, you know what, you don't need to worry about the rent this month. We'll catch it up later. You know, stuff like that. Don't worry about it. Just go about your life. They shut your business down. I get it. So just relax. We'll figure it out later. And people are doing that, and I think that helps. It does. It doesn't help the market necessarily. It just helps people's attitude, and that someday things are going to get better again. All right. By the way, our board is clear. If you may give us a quick call, we've got plenty of time to take your call. In the meantime, I'm going to finish up some of these emails. All right. Recovered bailout funds this time. Okay, this is from Mike. All right, Mike, we don't know what the net cost of the $2 trillion recovery law will be and its impact on the national debt. You're absolutely right. We really don't. We can call it $2 trillion, but we'll see. Billions of dollars in the program are dedicated to loans to both large and small businesses. It remains to be seen what the net cost will be. That is, how much spent minus how much repaid. Here's what happened to loans in the 2008 TARP. Recovered funds totaled $441 billion. Pardon me, phone doesn't want to keep up. $426 billion invested. Not bad. We made money. We'll see. The damage to the national debt may be significantly less than projected. Mike, that's a very, very good point. In addition, we have to also recognize that without this, what would the economy do? Now, we can't know because we came to this road, and instead of just going down the right road, the right-hand road, we took a left turn. We cannot know with clarity what's down the right road. We can guess. We can do all kinds of things, but the reality is we can't really. We see Congress do it all the time. Well, the actual cost of doing this is going to be, no, it's not. It's having Medicare is not going to be $20 million or $20 billion plan. It grows to trillions. Of, you know, never does it stay the same. So we can't know, but it's a really valid point. If we are talking about collecting it back, giving people low interest loans, and getting it back later, both in tax, in the form of tax, because the business is alive and hiring people and taxing people. But it's a really valid point. We did really pretty well in 2008 by taking some equity and stuff like that. So as we look at it again in the political filter of this is, you know, just a corporate welfare bill, thanks to the bartender. I mean, this the wisdom of a 30-year-old bartender. Wow, I just need to sit and listen at her knee. Is amazing. I mean, it is political, and that's why we have to be aware of the politics. And the politics are that, you know, we shouldn't be giving money to Boeing and things like that, and the airlines. I don't know how they think these companies without are going to fly them around the world like they like to if we don't let them exist. They need money. They were shut down through no fault of their own. All right. So, Mike, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Let's jump on to Jim, the straw man you built. Oh, my gosh. All right. Well, okay. Straw man you built of me is all wrong. It's Jim again. I am a registered Republican, tired of mindless rants from both sides. Please stick to your profession. Okay, thanks, Jim. All right, anybody else? Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. And our number here is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. And again, we've got about 3 minutes left. So I want to finish up a couple of things. We've talked a lot about the annuities. I've talked about fear of missing out. We saw some of that this last week. Where we saw the market take off and then keep going. Take off and keep going. One of the things I want to mention with this is that people feel like they can trade. So I'm just going to quickly mention this, okay? You can't. We've told you many, many times, of course, that if you miss the best 10 days, for example, over a 5 or 10 year period. I mean, you basically miss it all, right? You miss the whole return. Right. But then logically it's like, well, yeah, but I could miss the worst days, right? But here's the fact. 6 out of 10 of the best days occurred within 2 weeks of the worst days. Really? In, out, in, out, in, out. That's going to work? And boy, has that ever been that way now, right? Remember, we got to be in to win. Got to. We got to be in to win. It's kind of sort of that easy. And it's really when we talk about this before, it's like, you know, the hardest thing to do is sit on our hands. And when times are hard, it is hard. Not to feel like you ought to be doing something. And once again, we turn on the TV, watch the CNBC and Fox Business talking about trades. Doesn't calm down that whole idea that we need to stay put with the highest quality companies. Paying dividends, raking them in. Let the cash build up if you're concerned. But don't sell and panic. Remember, the best days are right next to the worst days almost all the time. They really are. It's a tough, tough time, and it's going to be a tough week. Keep focused on where we're going. The light is at the end of the tunnel. Have a good weekend.